Welcome to Rights Watch, a program about human rights around the world from Human Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham. Equatorial Guinea is the fourth largest producer of oil in sub-Saharan Africa. It's got a tiny population. By some measures, it's the wealthiest country on the continent. But the people of Equatorial Guinea don't see much of that wealth. The West African country's president, Teodoro Obiang, has been in power for more than 30 years. His regime has been marked by corruption and human rights abuses. So there was something of an uproar recently when a UN agency announced it would be awarding a prize in Obiang's name. Lisa Misol is a researcher at Human Rights Watch who focuses on Equatorial Guinea, and she's here with us today. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, great to be here.
And we're also joined by Tutu Alicante. He's the executive director of a nonprofit called EG Justice. EG is the nickname for Equatorial Guinea. Hi, Tutu.
Hello, thank you.
Lisa, you're here. I know you've been responding to this UNESCO prize, the Obiang Prize. How did you react when you heard that this was actually going to be awarded?
It looks on its face like a joke that they should be issuing a prize named after and also financed by this president. And the prize is actually for scientific advances to improve the quality of life. The quality of life in Equatorial Guinea is really extraordinarily low, has some of the worst development indicators in the entire planet, even though it should be among the very wealthiest countries. Just to give a comparison, it's about as rich per capita as Italy. And yet the people there have extraordinarily high death of mothers in childbirth and of infants. So when we looked at this, we were shocked, we were appalled, and we said, obviously something must be done to reverse this.
And Tutu, what do you think this money should be used for?
One of the most important ways to advance human rights today is through education, right? And UNESCO sits at this very critical juncture where it is the only UN body that has a specific mandate to advance education. And their work should be about in advancing education for the purpose of making human rights better around the world.
Because the state of education in Equatorial Guinea is not so great, I understand.
The state of education in Equatorial Guinea is deplorable. I mean, Lisa just mentioned the general well-being of Equatorial Guineans, you know, but then when you look at all the different aspects in terms of human development index, you know, healthcare, education, access to water, et cetera, Equatorial Guinea, despite its high GDP per capita, is among the worst in the countries in the world in all these different human development index factors.
Can I jump in here with an example that, on education specifically? UNESCO itself, just a few weeks ago, issued its annual report about the state of education around the world, and its own findings are that Equatorial Guinea is one of very few countries in the world where enrollment levels in primary education, which is really kind of the crux of building up an educated population that can advance, primary education levels are actually declining in Equatorial Guinea, even as the country is growing wealthier and wealthier by the day. Well, I say the country, but frankly, it's President Obiang that's getting wealthier by the day. The people aren't seeing this money.
And Tutu, since oil was discovered in the Gulf of Guinea, that was, I think, around 15 years ago, the country has become incredibly rich. I know you've been in exile for some time, but tell us a little bit more about what it looks like on the ground.
I have nieces in my country who wake up in the morning and instead of going to school, have to go fetch for water. And after that, come back home, you know, I have to go to the market to sell donuts or something to supplement the income at home. You know, that's the life that most Equatorial Guineans, 75% of Equatorial Guineans who are not seeing the benefits from this oil wealth are living, where children that are supposed to be going to school are instead at home working. So there is a lot that this money could be doing inside the country to help in the critical areas of education that UNESCO should be paying attention to, as well as in other areas. You know, I could tell you horrible stories about people dying in hospitals without access to doctor. You know, people that get to the hospital alive and 3, 4, 5 hours after waiting for a doctor that never shows up, die. You know, looking at death in Equatorial Guinea requires you to also think about corruption, the corruption that doesn't allow that money to get there, you know, and that's precisely the money that's being used to fund international awards like the UNESCO Obiang Prize.
And on that point, Human Rights Watch, together with many organizations, including Tutu's organization, EG Justice, has called on UNESCO to investigate exactly where the funds they have accepted from President Obiang came from. Because this question of corruption is very extensively documented in Equatorial Guinea, President Obiang himself has come under judicial inquiry for money laundering in different jurisdictions. And UNESCO got $3 million, half of which ultimately is due to be given out over prizes, the rest of which covers its administration expenses. Those $3 million, where do they come from? Not only should they be applied for the benefit of the people inside the country, but UNESCO shouldn't be accepting money unless it can prove that it's not dirty funds.
You talked about efforts for President Obiang to be held accountable for corruption in other jurisdictions. Are you talking about in the U.S.?
The U.S. Senate has twice investigated corruption involving Equatorial Guinea and really helped to highlight that. But there are also legal cases. And I'd like to ask Tutu to speak to that because his organization is quite deeply involved.
Thank you, Lisa. So there is right now pending communication at the African Commission for Human Rights, precisely dealing with issues of the government of Equatorial Guinea diverting funds that are supposed to be going towards developing the nation, right? And there is also a case in the tribunals in Spain, you know, which I can't discuss because it's still a pending case, but precisely a case that seeks to investigate, you know, allegations of money laundering against the president and high-level government officials in Equatorial Guinea.
Because these are people, President Obiang and his family, I understand, that live very lavish, very sort of showy lifestyles, including owning some property in the U.S.
One of the things that was unveiled in the first investigation about 4 or 5 years ago was precisely that about 8 members of the Obiang family own accounts at the Riksbank, you know, many of whom also own properties in the United States. So, for instance, the son of President Obiang, who also carries his name, Teodoro Ngema Obiang, owns a $35 million estate in Malibu. President Obiang himself and his wife own a couple of mansions in Potomac, Maryland, and so on and so forth.
When we look overall at the way the international community treats President Obiang, are there mixed messages that he's getting? I know that he was at the White House not too long ago.
President Obiang was received by the Bush administration very warmly. Condoleezza Rice personally referred to him as a dear friend of the United States. The Obama administration is being more cautious. But on the question of really mixed messages, I think that's an important one because Equatorial Guinea has this oil wealth, and it's largely U.S. oil companies. The oil industry is very important in the U.S.-Equatorial Guinea relationship, which is something we can speak about globally. It's also very important. It gives President Obiang a card to play. And he uses that as much as he can, and he hires public relations firms, lobbyists, and so forth. And that's where the money is going instead of going into schools for children in Equatorial Guinea.
Do we know how much he pays his lobbyists and his public relations people?
Lanny Davis, apparently a former Clinton aide, has now been retained for slightly over $2 million to represent or to advise DG government on reform issues. And this is after having paid up to $9.1 million to Cassidy and Associates and about $45,000 to Corvis. This is a public relations firm in Washington, D.C. And I should tell you that, you know, this was very infuriating to me. And the reason is, you know, EG Justice, Human Rights Watch, and several other organizations just spent about 5-6 months through this process at the UN in Geneva called the Universal Periodic Review, basically doing what these lobbyists should be doing, right? Giving Obiang basically a roadmap of what he needs to do if he really wants to address human rights issues in Equatorial Guinea. If he is really looking into cleaning up his image, look, we have made it easy for him, you know, and cheap. You know, he doesn't need to spend the $2 million. Lisa, myself, and others, you know, we have already put a blueprint out there. You know, it's just follow these recommendations, you know, and not only would you clean your image, but you would actually address real issues inside Equatorial Guinea.
I think it's also interesting to note President Obiang is sparing no expense with these lobbyists, with public relations experts, but still wasn't able to prevent the country from being ousted from this extractive industries transparency initiative.
In terms of the transparency efforts called EITI, really this global initiative, ultimately after reviewing Equatorial Guinea, decided that it wasn't doing the bare minimum to deserve to even stay in as a candidate country to join because it has not shown a commitment to being transparent about what money it's getting from its oil sector and in terms of participating with civil society groups who are horribly repressed in the country and allowing them some opportunity to have dialogue on these issues and be at the table. Because they have some basic standards, this initiative said, you know what, we can't keep you in. Transparency International ranks it as one of the most corrupt on the planet, and there's a project that produces a ranking in terms of budget transparency, which is a related issue, and Equatorial Guinea scored 0.
Do you see that having an impact besides just hiring more PR agents? Is the country making any real changes?
Well, I'm sure they'll pump some money and more money into that, but what we hope to do is really put some true attention into addressing the underlying problems that led to their ouster. And the groups, the very brave individuals inside the country who are trying to stand up to their government, say, we think we need to be heard on this. There needs to be a way for them to stay engaged. So we hope that the government will do as it's claiming it plans to do, which is to make some improvements in this area.
Especially in the area of dissidents like Tutu. I mean, he's in exile, it seems, right? Tutu, tell a little bit about what you see in terms of dissent within the country. Are people allowed to speak? Is there any room for dialogue?
Unfortunately, there still isn't any space for dissent inside the country.
None.
You know, I mean, I'm here at the radio station right now, so I can tell you that in Equatorial Guinea, if you are at the radio station, you are the station of the government or you are the station of owned by his son. No other station, radio station exists in Equatorial Guinea. No independent journals or papers exist in Equatorial Guinea. No libraries, etc., etc. So there is no space, you know.
Are you hopeful that things will change? That there'll be a time when you can go back there and work?
I am hopeful. I mean, I wouldn't be doing this work if I wasn't hopeful, if I didn't see a different Equatorial Guinea. But it's going to take us Equato Guineans working with other concerned citizens of the world to change it, right? And Equatorial Guinea is small enough, really. We're talking about 500,000 people. That is, this is a neighborhood in the Bronx. It's not even the Bronx, you know. So we're talking about 500,000 people. Equatorial Guinea is small enough to where if enough members of the UN, countries like the US and others cared, we could put enough pressure on the current regime to change its act.
What I'm hearing, too, is that these are big American oil companies, big oil companies there. So we are actually, we're benefiting from Equatorial Guinea, too.
Exactly. And for me, that's the important key point, right? And that's the point that I make to the U.S. government and oil companies. You know, it's an issue of legacy, you know. So 20 years from now, when there's no longer oil in Equatorial Guinea, what are my nieces going to think about the U.S.? Oh, they just came, got the oil, and left. And it seems to me that that's not what America stands for. You know, I've been in America long enough to know that, you know, there are certain principles here. There are certain principles about equality, certain principles about dignity, et cetera, et cetera. It's not a perfect situation, yes, but more so than many other countries that we know, it would be a shame for 20 years from now for people to remember the U.S. just as the country that came and got the oil and left. And when things like the things that Lisa mentioned, torture, arbitrary detentions, et cetera, happened in a place like Equatorial Guinea, in which the U.S. is heavily invested in. Now, the U.S. is spending billions of dollars in Equatorial Guinea to get that oil. When we don't do anything to stop that injustice, we are tacitly complying and we're tacitly contributing to that injustice.
Tutu Alicante is with EG Justice. And my guest was also Lisa Miesel. She's with the Business and Human Rights Division at Human Rights Watch. You can learn more about Equatorial Guinea at hrw.org, and you can learn more about Tutu's organization at egjustice.org. That's Rights Watch for this week. Human Rights Watch is an independent organization dedicated to defending and protecting human rights around the world. For more about us, including audio, video, and multimedia features, please visit hrw.org. Thanks for listening to Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham.